Hello, and welcome to Friends for Life, a podcast of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's National Mission. We're here to come alongside you as we journey through life under the cross. What does it look like to care for our neighbors in body and soul? How do we tend to our own body and soul? How can we speak up for life? And finally, how do we share the faith with the next generation? Join us as we have these conversations and learn together. We hope you'll stick around and be our friends for life.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Neugebauer, here with my guest, Chalice Dieterding. Chalice is here to talk about her experience as a foster parent and also her volunteer role as a CASA. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate. Chalice, welcome. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. As Steph said, my name is Chalice, and I am a lifelong Lutheran. I was baptized as an infant in the Lutheran church and went to Lutheran grade school. And I've been married for almost 24 years. I have a seventh grader and a first grader who are also in our local Lutheran grade school. So we're very active in our church. We are super Lutherans, if you want to call it that. My husband was also baptized as an infant in the Lutheran church, and we met in a Lutheran church in college. So I live in Northern Illinois, the far west suburbs of Chicago. We probably could get to Iowa faster than we can get to downtown just with the traffic, but definitely the suburbs. And we love it here. It's a small town. My oldest son is biologically ours, but it was many years of infertility before we were blessed with him. And then my younger son, who is 7 now, God gifted us with him through a lovely lady who placed him with us for adoption. And he's been with us since birth, though. We, at that time, were not foster parents. We were really just looking to expand our family, and we did so through private adoption at that time. He was born in New Orleans, so we love having a little bit a connection to that area of the world, too. We were not interested or even thinking about foster care when we adopted him. It was kind of in some ways, a selfish, like, we want to expand our family, and God has not blessed us with that through natural means. So we didn't know at the time how amazing it would be to have him in our lives and how blessed we would be to have him through adoption. We had no idea that our family would later go into foster care, but we did that it's coming up on 4 years ago. We got licensed for the first time. The day that we were licensed, actually our licensing worker had to push our license through a little bit because they had kids that needed a home. And so the day that our license got finalized, we were brought a 3-month-old and a 3-year-old. And they stayed with us just a month. And I cried for 3 days because it was hard to say goodbye to them. We didn't know that they were only going to be with us for those 4 weeks. And we weren't necessarily looking to expand our family. We have not expanded our family through foster care in the meantime. And we have had, since then, we've had 6 total placements. That's 6 different kids that have been in and out of our home for more than just a short period of time. We've done some respite care, which is when they're placed with another family, but that family is going somewhere. We had one time where a woman was taking her teenage daughter to a cheerleading competition in Arizona, and the thought of taking a 2-year-old for a week through that, all of that, she was like, oh, I don't want to do that. So we kept her baby for that week. And so there's different aspects, different ways we have fostered, but we've had 6 longer-term placements.
And what has your experience been like in these last 4 years as a foster parent?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question because it's an amazing journey. I feel so blessed to have had these kids in our life. I feel like God has really done some amazing things through these kids in our life, with my kids, but foster care is hard. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There are times where you just want to cry. You get down on your hands and knees and pray to God, like, help me get through this, because it is hard sometimes. Sometimes it's medically hard. Sometimes it's emotionally hard. There's not a moment. There's not a kid who is in foster care or in any way in the adoption world that doesn't have some level of trauma from it. People will say, oh, they're just a baby. They're fine. They don't know. And that's just not true. My kid, my seven-year-old, who has been with me and was placed in my arms when he was 1 minute old, because I was in the room when he was born, he still has some things that I'm like, oh, I think that's adoption. I think that's adoption, you know, like abandonment or whatever. So there's trauma, and sometimes that looks ugly. And I would say that if you haven't done foster care, you just can't really understand. And that sounds harsh. And I don't want to like turn people off who are listening to say like, well, I can't help. And that's not true. You can help. But unless you've been there and lived with that, some of the trauma that comes from this broken part of our world, it's hard to truly understand, because I didn't before we entered this world. I saw these amazing people bringing foster kids into our church weekly. I was like, oh, that's super cool. Look, their kids are sitting so nice. You know, it's just, they were just their kids. And then I entered this world and I was like, whew, okay, this is big. It's tough. But what you can do is you can love on people who are going through that journey, and you can support them through it. Because they need it.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of answers to this question, but I believe you when you say no one can truly understand unless you're in it or have done it. What is different about being a foster parent than being a parent to a biological child, or even to being a parent of your adopted child?
Yeah, it's been interesting because I've experienced all those worlds, and they're all different. Like there's different things in each of them, and every kid is different, right? So they're all going to experience things differently. I would say one of the hard parts about foster care that you don't get with your own biological children is intrusion into your life about everything. So there are constantly people who are monitoring what you're doing. You know, your caseworker is here every month, and your maybe CASA is here every month. And children in foster care are more likely to need things like speech therapy and occupational therapy for a variety of reasons. And just, you know, therapy. And so there are appointments to take them to. And yes, when we have biological children, they still need to go see the dentist and they still need to go to the doctor, and you have those appointments. But when you get a five-year-old who has never been to the dentist before, you're not just going for a cleaning. You know, you're going for a cleaning and three more appointments to take care of all of the cavities and things that, you know, have to be dealt with. And so there's constant extra stuff that you're having to deal with. So that's just from a logistic perspective, something that's hard. But the trust that you build with your biological children, it builds over time, right? So like your biological children will know that when you are setting a boundary with them or some sort of discipline with them, that they can still trust you. It's out of love. It's out of care for them. They may not like it in that moment, but they can reason through that because you've been there with them from the beginning. Even my seven-year-old, who's adopted but has been with us from birth, knows that. We have a connection. We have, you know, there's trust there. When you have a kid brought into your home who's only been with you for a week, and you have to put some sort of boundaries with them. Like, say you have a teenager who is on their phone too much, and you either have to take it away or just say, hey, this is becoming a problem. We're not going to have the phone at all. We're sending it back to your parents. Like, if it came with them, that can be massive, right? With my 12-year-old, I take his cell phone away because he's disobeying or whatever, and he trusts and knows that he's going to get that back and that there's not danger of him never connecting with his family again. But if you have a teenager that you take their cell phone away that they've been connecting with their siblings or their parents with over, they fear, there's true fear there that they might not see them again or talk to them again. So there's not, I would say one of the biggest differences is the lack of trust and connection that you build with your biological children. And with adoption, you kind of asked about adoption as well. I think that that's so vast and change, you know, it varies so much. For me, because my son, you know, I was in the room when he was born, I experience a different adoption walk with him than someone who their child came to them at age 2 or 10. So it's hard to really describe that, but there's always, whatever age the child was separated from their natural family, there's still always potential for fear of abandonment because they have been abandoned in their past, or, you know, there's just so many things that can come up with adoptive and foster kids.
You mentioned a lot about the logistics of daily life with foster children. I'm certain you had to go through a lot of training to prepare you for some of this stuff. What does your training look like?
So it depends on the state. Every state is different. Since I live in Illinois, I had to go through a training called PRIDE, which is, I don't even know the total hours because it's been 4 years, but I feel like it was somewhere between 20 and 30 hours. We did online training because we were kind of just coming out of COVID when we got licensed. Not even really coming out of it. You know, April of 21 is when we got our license. So sort of coming out of it, I guess. But our training was all online. We met over Zoom with a trainer like 1 hour per week to just make sure that what we had learned online was really, that we had understanding of it. But I would say my personal opinion is that that training has been far less beneficial to me than the training that I have pursued personally. And sometimes that is books I read, movies I watch, podcasts I listen to, just articles I've read on various things, not even necessarily foster care related, but kids in foster care are more likely to have things like ADHD. And so learning about ADHD through magazine articles I've read or whatever, just my own personal development, I feel like has been more applicable. And maybe that's because whatever situation I have been in, whatever foster kid I have had, it's been like just-in-time training, you know, like, oh, I got to figure this out. I'm going to the Bible and I'm going to, you know, whatever resource to help me through this. One of the greatest gifts I have been given in the area that I live is I have a wonderful organization here. It's called Called to Care, and they have a monthly support group for moms. They provide childcare so that moms, foster moms, can feel like they can come and not have to worry about getting a sitter, because that's often very difficult in foster care. If you have children with behavioral issues, it's hard to find a sitter who's willing to take them. Even family sometimes who know them still isn't anxious or isn't excited to do that sometimes. So they provide childcare, and we get together and foster moms talk Remember when I said earlier that if you haven't been there, you don't fully appreciate how hard it is? Those women get me and they understand and they'll listen to me, you know, they'll hug me when I cry and listen to the struggles that we have had. And so that type of organization is remarkable. They do many other things, but that's one thing that they do. Part of those nights is we do a training. So we're there for about 2 hours, and usually about an hour of it is training that we listen to. And it always feels more relevant than what I received from the state. So yeah, there's a lot of training, but I think it's like any parenting. There's a lot of just in time, figure it out training you have to do on your own and be willing to do on your own.
I can relate to that. That's for sure. You talked about the challenges, and rightly so. What are some of the unexpected joys that you've experienced with being a foster mom to these children?
Well, I'll tell you probably the highlight of my foster journey, and this is going to sound strange to many of you, and I'll talk about why in a second, but probably the highlight of my foster journey was when I was able to return a kid who had been with us for 16 months, from age 4 months to age 20 months, to his parents, and get to see them reunited as a family. It was really powerful for me. He was actually our second placement, so it was a couple of years ago at this point. But obviously, he'd been in our home for 16 months. I was mom. You know, my husband was dad. My sons were brother. And we had already signed up. He was returned just before Christmas, and we had already signed up for a Christmas event with Santa that was specifically for foster kids, just because some of those like big, like go to the mall, there's kids running around, it's crowded, it's lazy. That's too much for some foster kids. Like the sensory stuff is too much. And so this organization called The Care puts together a Christmas event every year for foster kids in the area, and have Santa and snacks and crafts and things. We had already signed up for that. Well, he was returned in the meantime, but we had invited his parents to bring him with them, you know, to bring him to this event still, along with his sister, who was not in our care, had not been in our care. But so the four of them were, you know, reunited together all at the same time. He was sitting on my lap at one point, and I said something about go see mama. And he immediately got up and ran to his actual mom's arms, even though I had, until a week before, it was literally 1 week before that, I had been mama for 16 months. Majority, you know, his young toddler years, infant and toddler years. And it was so powerful to me that God wants families to be together. That is how he designed us as humans, to be together as a family. And sin and brokenness in this world is what has created this need for foster care and need for adoption. And while I am so grateful that my 7-year-old was brought into our life through adoption, I know that that is not what God designed, but he made something good out of brokenness, right? He took a broken situation and redeemed it, which we know he does repeatedly over and over. But it was so powerful to me to just see how families belong together when it's safe to do so. And it's made it so much easier for me to support reunification of these children with their biological parents. So that's probably the highlight of my foster journey, but there's so many joys. I mean, I'm a baby person, so we've had more babies. We have had, you know, we had a 9-year-old girl, and then all the way down to I picked a baby up from the hospital, from the NICU. So we've never done older than 9, but there's so many joys. I mean, they're kids. Kids in general just bring joy to the world, I feel like. And even though there's a lot of brokenness in the foster world, they're still kids, and they have brought a lot of joy to our life as well.
Well, what I'm hearing you say too, and even in that story, the joy, it crushes you at the same time. And I think that's just in general part of parenting, that as you see the good that God is doing and the growing that God is making happen in your child's life, it also kind of hurts you as a parent. And so add that to a situation where you're the foster parent for these kids, and I can imagine the weight of you knowing what's right and best for them, but also your relationship having to change is grief. There's grief there. Sure. after reuniting them with their parents.
Yeah. And the reason I said earlier that it's going to sound strange to people that this is the highlight and the joy, like giving this child back to his parents, is because I have heard so many people who have not been in the foster world say, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't give them back. I'd fall in love and then I couldn't give them back. And I guess my response to that is, somebody has to take a hit for these kids. Somebody has to do it. And maybe I'm cold enough that I can do it. Maybe God has given me a little bit of protection of my heart that I can do it. But I know these kids need someone to take a chance with them and for them. And yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to be hard because the foster care world is hard. I live in Illinois. We are literally ranked 50th in all of the states for several measures that foster care is ranked by, you know, like time to return home and things like that. And so any of these like measurable things. And so being in the foster care world in Illinois is even more difficult because the system makes it difficult for these kids, for these foster parents, for the natural parents. And so it is hard, but they're worth it. And frankly, God calls us to take care of the orphans and the widows in James 1, right? So I think when people say I couldn't give them back, God equips you to do things that you don't think you can do. And I would just challenge people a little bit that think that you might be able to do more than you think you can.
I completely 100% agree, not just with this, but with many other matters of, you know, the Christian life. And the Christian life is one of sacrifice, where God calls us to bear the burdens of others, to bear our own crosses, and also vocationally to serve our neighbors in need. And what that looks like could be different within this foster care system. But it is, in fact, the church's job to be taking in these children and then caring for these families so that we can reunite what God had put together. And ultimately, kids belong to their biological parents because man and wife belong to each other. So what God has put together, let no man separate. And so the same is true, of course, in God's intended creation for all families to be together. But what a beautiful thing that Christians can step in and make out of brokenness something that can be beautiful still for that family.
Absolutely.
Now, tell me about your other involvement in the foster care system, which, separate from being a foster parent, you are also a CASA. Remind us again what that stands for, and then tell us what that looks like in your life, in your state, and, you know, nationally. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. So CASA is court-appointed special advocate. In my county, and this varies a little bit depending upon where you are, but in my county, we are appointed as the GAL, the guardian ad litem, for the child. Our role as a CASA is to advocate for the needs of that child. Sadly, in our court systems, there are people there that are advocating for the parents. They have attorneys. They have, you know, there's the state's attorney who's advocating for the state and their interest in that, which some may say, well, that's for the kids, but it's, you know, it's not exactly true. The judge has to make sure the parents' legal rights are being looked after in addition to trying to do what's best for the kid. But the CASA is solely focused on what is best for the child. I don't care when I am advocating for my kid if it is bad for the parents. I don't care. I had a situation yesterday. I was talking with the foster parent of one of my kids on my CASA case. They can't share too much because of privacy rules, but there was a situation that she was trying to work through. And I told her, I said, I don't care if this gets the parents in trouble. So I was trying to debate whether or not to share some information with the judge at an upcoming court date. I said, I don't care if it gets the parents in trouble. What I care about is if the child knows that that information came to me from you, the foster mom, and that puts your relationship at jeopardy because then he doesn't trust you. That's what I care about. So it's always focusing on the kid and what is best for the kid. So the CASA is appointed by the judge, usually the CASA program, and then the CASA program will, you know, appoint a specific advocate. And I don't know a lot about what CASA looks like nationwide as far as coverage and availability of CASAs, but CASA is a nationwide program, and then each state has its own organization, and then each county, at least in Illinois, has its own organization. In some counties, that organization is very active, very thriving, and doing very well. The county that I am in, every kid that enters our judicial system gets a CASA assigned to them. That is, there's not always enough CASAs. So that doesn't always happen in every county. We're fortunate that our program is a pretty strong and thriving program. A lot of good recruitment and such. So that's a great way to help the foster care community. If you don't feel like you can be a foster parent, but you want to help, the commitment it varies depending upon the case. The initial training is, I think it's 30 hours of training, and you, at that point, get sworn in by a judge because you are a sworn person for the court because you get appointed by a judge to that kid, to that kid's case. And then, you have some level of additional, I think it's 12 hours of required training every year after that. So you continue to train and learn things and so on, but the commitment once you're trained is not necessarily huge. I mean, my case before this, the case that I'm on right now is pretty intense. It works because I'm a stay-at-home mom now and I have more time, and that's why I chose to take this case. But, you know, previous cases I've had have been minimal, maybe an hour and a half a month commitment. And I know that there are people who will listen to this that have an hour and a half to give to the foster care world. And so this may be, you know, CASA may be a great, great opportunity for you. I think that God gifts people in many different ways. And if you are someone that feels like you can, you know, love on a child, because I see the kids as a CASA, I see them every month, every 30 days. I see them face to face and get to know them and become their person. that they know is consistent. I think that's the biggest thing with CASA. So like I said, with the foster care world, it's a little, the system itself is broken in many ways. And so a kid in foster care might have 3 different caseworkers over 2 years. So there's no consistency there. But when a CASA is appointed, they typically, because they're volunteer, they're not leaving a job, right? Like a caseworker might move to a different agency or move to a different area of social work or whatever. A CASA, typically, because they're a volunteer, they are there with them through the whole thing. They're the one constant in their journey through this whole court system, and they can help them navigate that a little bit.
What does that look like for you, Chalice, then? You know, you said sometimes in just 1 month you'll be volunteering for an hour and a half, but this case that you're involved in right now is more intense. What does that time consist of? Do you go visit them in their foster home? Do you visit how their biological parents are doing? What do you do, and how do you interact with that child?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'm sorry I didn't clarify that before. So part of one requirement of CASA, the minimum requirement of what you do as a CASA, is to see the child within every 30 days. And so usually I go for a visit, and typical is an hour that you're there with the child. But my last visit with my teenager, we were just enjoying each other. So I was there almost 2 hours. And babies, you know, I saw babies a few days before that. And I was there more than an hour because I love babies. And so I have a little bit more time to give when my boys are at school. And so I do that. And I just enjoy the kids on my case right now. So for me right now, it's a blessing to have them in my life. And I hope I'm a blessing to them. But that's the minimum that you're going to be doing. Depending upon the kids, you may be attending IEP meetings. You may be talking with their teachers. You may be talking with counselors. You may be talking with medical professionals. You're definitely talking with their foster parents if they're in a foster home. You're definitely talking with the biological parents. You may be observing. So sometimes that visit when you see the child is when they're in their foster home. Sometimes it is when they're having a visit with their parents, so you can see how the parents are parenting them. So there are lots of ways that you can advocate for the child, but it kind of depends on the case and the age of the children, right? You're not going to IEP meetings if the kids are 2. So
as we wrap up, what kind of lasting and eternal impact do you know that you're making as a foster parent and then also as a volunteer court-appointed special advocate or CASA?
That's a really tough question for me because I struggle personally, and this is just me personally, but I struggle with feeling like I'm doing anything good. And I feel like that's maybe lifelong Lutheran, like I am just a despicable, broken human. And the only good things that come through me are just out of God's grace and mercy. But I see these, you know, seeing as a foster parent, seeing families reconnected, knowing that the parents just needed whatever period of time to work through their struggles. And they just needed someone to care enough to say, yes, I will step in and take care of your children so that you can get yourself to a point where you are able to do that and do it well. And I think just knowing that God's wish for us is that children be with their parents and parents be together and them being one family and being able to support that and knowing that sometimes that's going to be hard, but that that fight is worth it. The fight to fight with no hesitation, because I know that Jesus didn't hesitate for one second to fight for me, you know, to go on that cross for me. And so I guess to answer your question about kingdom impact, to me, it's just about supporting families when they need it, supporting people. And I think that as a church is what we are called to do. As you mentioned earlier, it's not just about foster care or being a CASA, but about God calls us to take care of each other, to love each other, to support one another, to fight for one another when you need it. And that's why we foster, and that's why I'm a CASA.
I think, you know, from the outside me looking in at what you've told me you get to do, from what I see you doing a lot of lasting, impactful things. But ultimately, exactly like you said, what you're doing is supporting this divine design that God created, which is husband and wife, the family, and calling that good and supporting to that end those families to reunite and to live according to their design, to shine a light towards that. And even as a foster parent yourself, while they're in your home, to be a model of that to them with your husband. I think that's a gift in itself. So I thank you, Chalice, for sharing all of this with us, giving us things to think about and really a charge to consider how we, in our situations, whatever they may be, can have our hands involved in some way. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many ways to support foster care that don't involve being a foster parent, don't even involve being a CASA, because they're not small commitments, you know, they're ongoing commitments, I guess. But there are opportunities to support foster care where you one time be, you know, provide childcare at this, like this support night that I go to. There are some people that are there every month and they can give one night a month. There are some people that are there once because they can give 2 hours once, you know, places you can donate clothes and money and things. You know, there are lots of ways to support foster care that don't require huge commitments, but you can make an impact in the kingdom in that way.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at LCMS Life. And finally, listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have an idea about a guest you'd like to hear from or a topic you want talked about? Email us at friendsforlife@lcms.org. We want to hear from you about what you want to hear about when it comes to issues of life.
Thanks for joining us. Friends for Life is a podcast that discusses the life God has given and the people He has called you to serve, right where you are, in God's mission.